Hare Krishna, welcome everybody to today's Bhagavatam class. We'll chant a little first. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Givada Dari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivada Dari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janananjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janananjana. Jamuna Kira Vanachari. Jamuna Kira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivada Dari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivada Dari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janananjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janananjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Gurudev 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 Jaya Jaya Gurudev Itagora Premanandi Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 16, Text Number 42. Vacham yacha mano yacha Vacham yacha mano yacha Pranan yachedriyani cha Pranan yachendriyani cha Atmanam atmana yacha Atmanam atmana yacha Nam buya kalpase duvane Na buyaya kalpase druvane Vacham yacha mano yacha Pranam yachendriyani cha Atmanam atmana yacha Na buya kalpase duvane Vacham yacha mano yacha Pranan yachendriyani cha Atmanam atmana yacha Nabuya kalpase duvane Word for word Vacham speech Yacha control mana the mind yacha control pranan your breathing yacha control indriyani excuse me the senses cha also atmanam the intelligence atmana the purified intelligence Yacha, control. Na, never. Buya, again. Kalpes, you will fall. Advane, on the path of material existence. Translation and purport by the followers of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Therefore, control your speaking, subdue the mind, conquer the life error, regulate the senses, and through purified intelligence, bring your rational faculties under control. In this way, you will never again fall onto the path of material existence. Please repeat, therefore, control your speaking, subdue the mind, conquer the life error, regulate the senses, and through purified intelligence, bring your rational faculties under control. In this way, you will never again fall onto the path of material existence. Translation again. Therefore, control your speaking, subdue the mind, conquer the life air, regulate the senses, and through purified intelligence, bring your rational faculties under control. In this way, you will never again fall onto the path of material existence. Purport. One should see all things as expansions of the Supreme Lord's potency, and thus, with speech, mind, and words, one should offer respect to all things, without minimizing any living entity or material object. Since everything belongs to the Lord, everything ultimately should be engaged in the Lord's service with great care. A self-realized devotee tolerates personal insult and does not become envious of any living entity, nor does he see anyone as his enemy. Excuse me. This is practical enlightenment. Although a pure devotee may criticize those who obstruct the Lord's mission, such criticism is never personally motivated, nor is it ever based on enviousness. An advanced devotee of the Lord may chastise his followers or criticize the demoniac, but only to carry out the mission of the Supreme Lord, and never out of personal enmity or enviousness. For one who completely gives up the material concept of life, there is no possibility of entering again onto the path of birth and death. Om Agni Chirandasya Jananjanan Salakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Shapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadame Antaranti Svabharantikam. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master is opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimati Tamo Krishna Goswami Nityanamani. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavari Pashkatari Shatarini. Vanchakopatrubhascha Kripasinavasevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So it's a very amazing verse. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 16, Text Number 42. It's entitled, The Lord's Opulence. And we're continuing with Krishna's conversation with Uddhava. Uddhava is asking questions. Krishna is answering them. And Krishna is very pleased by this because someone else asked him questions and he answered and gave us the Bhagavad Gita. Yes, Krishna asked so many, Arjuna, the great warrior, asked Krishna so many questions on the battlefield of Kurukshetra right before the great fratricidal war. And so Krishna was pleased by that. He was pleased by the surrender of his devotee in asking these questions. And so he's similarly pleased when Uddhava asks these questions of Krishna. He's very pleased that, and he mentions this earlier, Krishna mentions this earlier in the chapter, that just as you are asking these questions, Arjuna asked these questions. So he's very pleased. And Krishna's pure devotee doesn't need answers to questions, but for our benefit, he does that. And it's the same for Srila Prabhupada. We ask questions of our spiritual master. We ask questions of our gurus, our shiksha gurus, and they answer us. And Krishna's pleased by this. And it's the same relationship. It's the same kind of thing, that the spiritual master is acting as Krishna. He's as good as Krishna. For all intents and purposes for us, he is Krishna. But of course, he is not Krishna at the same time. So we, in the same way that we make inquiry to the spiritual master already understands these things, but for our benefit, he speaks. So it's the same way. Krishna, Uddhava, and Arjuna are asking these questions. They don't need it. They've been placed into ignorance, at least Arjuna was, temporarily. He's never ignorant. Arjuna's never ignorant. But he's fallen into this situation, and by Krishna's energy, he's made to feel, I can't fight. I shouldn't fight. I don't want to fight. And so Krishna speaks the whole Bhagavad Gita as a way of convincing Arjuna why he should fight. So this concept that the Bhagavad Gita is a spiritual text that recommends nonviolence is really not true. It is in the sense that we are nonviolent, in the sense that we don't slaughter animals to eat their flesh, and we don't engage in idol destruction of living entities just for the mere sake of economic expansion or making money. That is forbidden, and it's forbidden by the understanding that is developed from a full understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. And so we shouldn't use these religious texts as an excuse to for so many isms, for so many political ends or current events, and say, well, this means this. We can use, because you can, you know, people will try to use religious scriptures to support their positions all the time. And so the Bhagavad Gita isn't recommending violence. It isn't recommending that we fight our enemies. In Arjuna's case, it meant that we have to do our duty. We have to do our dharma. Krishna wasn't saying kill for the sake of killing. He was saying kill because I'm telling you to kill. This is a fratricidal war. This is a war that you have not asked for. You tried everything in your power to avoid it. Diplomacy, loving exchanges, pleading, begging, agreeing to take even just a tiny little portion of land for which to be the leader of, the king of just a small village. And the Pandavas could have been satisfied. They would have allowed that. Krishna, but of course, Duryodhana said, no, I won't even give you as much land as can fit a pin, as a pin could be placed in. So Duryodhana forced the battle of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna met that challenge. He rose to the challenge because of his position as a warrior, as a king, as a leader. It is natural for him to have to fight when he's challenged. And so the Kshatriyas, the ruling class, they can do this. They're allowed to fight. And a lot of times they have to fight militarily in order to protect their citizens, to protect their charges, the people that are relying on them. And so Krishna set up this whole massive fratricidal war so that he could relieve the burden of the earth of these demoniac kings. So this is the way Krishna does things. And when we allow ourselves to be placed into our natural positions in life, we've been born with certain qualities and certain characteristics, and we should do the work that is natural for us to do. And we should follow dharma, follow the regulator principles, follow the varnas and ashramas. The varnas and ashrams, we must be place ourselves in the proper varna and ashram for our nature. The ashrams are sannyas, which is the topmost. It's very rare. Most people won't be sannyasis. There's a priestly class, right? There's Brahmins. Brahmins are just below that. They are celibate students, and they study. There's Vaishyas, and there's Sudras. And so we need to do we need to be in the proper position for what our natures call for. Many of us are brahminically minded, but we also have to do business. So there might be a little bit of mix in there, and that's okay. Some have to be, might be more inclined to be businessmen, but they also have to lead. They may have to be leaders of the temple or leaders of society. And if we follow the rules and regulations for each ashram, and we're putting Krishna first, we're trying to do dharma and putting Krishna consciousness as our goal first, then Krishna helps us. The guru helps us. The other devotees help us to prosecute, to engage in Krishna consciousness and in the right way for the right varna and ashram that we should be in. And you cannot create a new ashram. There's no bachelor ashram. His Grace Urjaswat Prabhu would always tell me that when I was trying to fight getting married. But I had a job and I had a house. And when you're a householder, you need a wife. You need a wife in the house to rule the house. And when you get Lakshmi in the house, when you bring a wife into the house and you treat her properly, Lakshmi comes into the house, both figuratively and symbolically. Yes, you get actual cash. Riches come to the home when a woman is treated properly as a wife, and then she becomes a mother, and you raise children, and you do your dharma properly. Krishna is pleased with that. The material energy works in such a way the demigods provide what you need. They're pleased with this because this is what society is for. It's for regulated living, living your life in a regulated way, raising children, raising crops, raising animals, not for slaughter, but for use on the farm, for milk, particularly animal that has been provided to give us milk, which is the most wonderful substance known to man. There's nothing comparable to the wonderfulness of milk. Is that a word, wonderfulness? To the wonder of milk. Milk is such an incredible product, and we get it from cows. Cow's milk is superior. Buffalo milk is not the same. It's very fatty, and it's very tasty. But it doesn't have the properties which give us, by drinking milk, we get higher brain function. Buffalo milk does not do that for us. And cows are so beautiful. They're wonderful creatures. We take care of the cow. The cow takes care of us. We could not, have such a variety of wonderful vegetarian foods without milk. It would be horrible. And so we're very fortunate we have a cow, and we're supposed to protect the cows and protect our charges, and not let our wives and daughters and sons and husbands to run wild, to just enjoy our senses. Unfettered sense enjoyment is demoniac. It's the reason there's so many problems in society, so much discord, pollution, misbehavior, wars on the planet today. So our goal, the Krishna Consciousness Movement's goal, is to give everyone Krishna consciousness, to tell them about the chanting of Hare Krishna. And then if everyone starts to do that and lives according to the rules and regulations, no meat, fish, or eggs, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no intercourse outside marriage, and chanting Hare Krishna, coming to the temple and offering your food to Krishna, eating only vegetarian food, everything will get better. Everything will get a lot nicer. Not just society-wise, but in your own life. In your own life, Krishna takes care. Krishna takes charge because you let him. You let him. You're calling out to him, Krishna, please engage me in your service. That's what chanting, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Chanting Hare Krishna is a calling out to the Lord, engage me in your service. And Krishna will. And not only will he engage in your service, in his service, he'll give you everything. Krishna will take care of everything directly. He'll put food right into your hands. And so this is a wonderful principle. It's a wonderful spiritual principle. And we can all feel it in our lives. And anyone that's coming here, you come a lot or you come a little, still you're feeling something. You're feeling that regard for Krishna. And that little tiny bit of regard for Krishna gets fanned. It's like a little spark. And it gets fanned by coming to the temple, meeting devotees, and hearing the Bhagavatam, and chanting Hare Krishna. And the little spark becomes a fire, a little flame. And that little flame grows and grows and grows as you add fuel to the fire. And the fuel is your Krishna conscious service. And you want to jump into this fire. You want a roaring fire, a blazing fire of Krishna service, of serving to Krishna. And sometimes it is hot. It feels hot, but it never burns. But it is a fire. And when you get into the fire of pure devotional service, it burns away all your sinful desires. It burns away even the basic desire for sinfulness is burned away. Not just the desires themselves, but the desire for the desire to do sinful things. So it's amazing, amazing process. And it very certainly works. And we see that in His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada's followers, all of his followers that follow strictly, they've become extremely advanced. And many of them are qualified to be spiritual masters. And you can take shelter of these spiritual masters and know that Krishna is being given to you purely, and that you're not being cheated, that you're not, that this isn't a movement for abusing bodies. It's not a movement to, for people to get, opulences thrown at their feet, to get honor and distinction heaped upon them. We do heap honor and distinction on people. Can you turn it back up, Prabhu? I don't need it adjusted at all, okay? And what we do is we don't do this because we want honor and distinction heaped upon us. We will heap honor and thank you. We will heap honor and distinction upon the spiritual masters, upon Srila Prabhupada and the devotees who are following strictly. And that is proper, but they don't take it for themselves. They don't say, oh yeah, I'm doing so well. Oh, I deserve this praise and honor. No, they take it. They see only that Krishna's mercy, their own spiritual master's mercy, is what's causing, helping. It's being used in a way, they're being used in a way that they're able to help others get Krishna. So they never take personal credit. And Srila Prabhupada never did that. And it's very interesting in the verse and purport. The verse really constantly mentions control, doesn't it? When you see the word for word, every other word is control. It's used four times, in this short verse. Control, control, control. Speech, mind, your breathing, the senses, intelligence. Use your intelligence, purify your intelligence, and you will never again fall onto the path of material existence. Isn't this astonishing that this is the promise? Once you control these things, you bring your rational faculties under control, you will never again fall onto the path of material existence. So the purport's pointing this out, that once you give up the desire to enjoy the material existence, you don't have to come back. You don't have to stay in it. You might stay in it to do service to Krishna, and that's Krishna consciousness. You know, Prabhupada came to the material world, but he was never of the material world. He was always transcendental to it. Even as a young boy, he said, there was never any time I did not know Krishna. And so this is being offered to us. This is why Srila Prabhupada came, that we can develop this consciousness, this Krishna consciousness, in such a way that we will rise above the petty, ugly desires of the material world and can actually become fully Krishna consciousness by giving Krishna to others. And the purport mentions how how a pure devotee sees things. He sees everything as an expansion of the Lord's potency. And thus, with his speech, with his mind, with her words, one offers respect to all things without minimizing any living entity or material object, because everything belongs to the Lord. So we treat everything with great care, and we use it in Krishna's service. And it's very interesting that the translators of the verse, in the purport, in the second half of the purport, they point out that a pure devotee may criticize those who obstruct the Lord's mission, and such criticism is never personally motivated, nor is it based on enviousness. So someone trying to say, well, oh, wait a minute, if you're like this, if you're controlling your mind and your speech and you're regulating your senses, you can't criticize. You know, you're violating this. You must not be a pure devotee if you're criticizing. No, the pure devotee can criticize, but they don't do it out of personal motivation. They don't do it out of enviousness. They do it out of a desire to help society, to help individuals, to overcome their ignorance of and their attachments to the material energy, so that when they begin to prosecute Krishna consciousness, if you make mistakes, someone should be there to help you, right? And we shouldn't be disappointed that someone helps us. And so, of course, we accept the chastisements of our spiritual master, but it's very difficult to accept the chastisements of other people. But very advanced devotees, they will. They can learn from animals. They can learn from trees. They can learn from life all around them. They see Krishna all around them, and they're reminded of their position as a servant of Krishna. And so they accept criticism very easily. They don't get mad just because someone criticizes them. They don't get mad back. Excuse me. But they're authorized, they're allowed to use criticism in a way, like a surgeon's scalpel, right? In the hands of a surgeon, a surgeon can go into the body and cut in and cut things very carefully and nicely in such a way that it heals the body. So that same scalpel in the hand of a rascal or a scoundrel, it just gouges and murders and makes things worse. So that's the difference. We don't want to be, you know, the rascal with the scalpel. We have to be very careful how we treat each other and how we do things. But as long as we're not acting out of enviousness, personal enmity, we can understand. It's better until we become very advanced, really, not to criticize. And then after, it is important, though, that we discriminate. We should discriminate against levels of devotees. Not against, but to understand at what level different people are at. To understand how we should interact with them and what kind of way we should interact with them. Very advanced devotees, they deserve our service, our homage, our praise. And we serve them in a very loving way. Those that are on an equal level to us spiritually, with their understanding and our understanding, we treat them as friends and we interact with them in a friendly way. Those who do not have as much understanding of spiritual matters as we do, we give them mercy by being kind to them, instructing them, giving them Krishna consciousness, giving them Prabhupada's books, giving them prasadam. You can't always tell people what they need to hear. You have to be very, very, very careful what you say. You know, if we have a born-again Christian come to the temple and they're just frothing at the mouth, Jesus or whatever, you have to be very careful how you can't tell them about the intricacies of pure devotional service. No, you start out with, you know, what Prabhupada was so famous for. Do you believe in the Ten Commandments? And they would say, yes. Then Srila Prabhupada would say, well, then why are you eating meat? It says very clearly, thou shalt not kill. And we know the... if you go back in history, or not back in history, but go into the source of these words, the Bible in English, you have the King James Version. Before English, it was in Greek. Before Greek, it was in Aramaic. And so they've traced back the exact meaning of that word, and it was never murder. You know, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. It was always been thou shalt not kill, meaning don't kill anything. Don't kill animals to eat them. Don't kill anything. Don't kill human beings and don't kill animals. The original commandment did not say thou shalt not murder thy fellow man. You know, the Lord could have made that very clear, right? He could have said thou shalt not kill thy fellow man. It doesn't say that. So thou shalt not kill, period. And so it's understandable that people today are confused by this. And so they change it. They try to change it. I went to, I took some friends from out of town many years ago to this House of Wax over in, I think it's near Arlington. It was Ripley's House of Wax. And so they had dioramas, you know, wax dioramas. This is very popular. Madame Tussauds in London. And famous people are depicted in the clothing they wore and their face and likeness. And so they had the Last Supper. You know, they had Jesus on the cross. And right before that, they had Moses and the Ten Commandments. So they had the Ten Commandments right up front in this section where you could read it. And for the commandment about thou shalt not kill, it said, thou shalt not murder. They had changed it. And it was amazing for me to see that. I haven't seen it before or since. But obviously this is the rationalization that people make, that many Christians make, that many followers of the Bible make, that it's okay to kill if you do it, you know, spiritually. If you just kill animals, just don't kill people, then it's okay. And it's just nonsense. You know, then there's even, you know, the Jewish tradition. If you kill an animal a certain way and drain the blood, then it's okay. It's okay to eat the animal. And this is just all nonsense. It's all just exceptions being made because people want to enjoy their senses by eating the flesh of animals. So we can understand that the spiritual master, the advanced devotees, will sometimes criticize. And this does not mean that they haven't controlled their speaking. They haven't subdued their mind. They have conquered their life, air, and senses through purified intelligence. They are under control. And that control and advancement allows them to sometimes criticize others. Thank you. So it's very interesting how the purport's been written, how Krishna is repeating this. We're hearing things that we hear again and again and again in the Gita. You know, to control ourselves, to control our speaking, control our mind, conquer our life errors. And it seems like, gosh, you know, we're trying to do that, but we're failing. We're making mistakes. This didn't work out. That didn't work out. I messed up this. I messed up that. I still didn't do this. That's going to be normal for devotees. Every devotee is going to struggle. We don't get to the end immediately. We get to the, we keep on trying. We stay on the path because there's going to be things that happen to us that draw us off the path. That sometimes we have fall downs. Sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we can't figure things out. But we don't give up the process. The process is not at fault. But our own desires and our own mistakes are the fault. But those mistakes are actually good. The failings that we have are good because Krishna is pointing out to us, Guru is pointing out to us, here's where you need to improve. You're making mistakes in the same area again and again and again. Don't do the same thing again. Do it differently, you know. That's the definition of insanity, right? To do the same thing over and over and over again and expect a different result. You're not going to get a different result from sense gratification. It's not going to make you any happier. It never made you happy now. It's fleeting, temporary, and it brings horrendous karma. So it's just, we know that. It's better to actually accept that, okay, this is happening. I want to change it now. I want to get better. I want to give up my misconceptions. And we can do that. The more we keep coming to the temple and keep on chanting, keep on hearing. It's amazing how it works. When I was out of town last week, I wasn't coming to the temple every morning and hearing Srila Prabhupada. Not that I come every morning, I try. But to see Prabhupada's Guru Puja. But the more you come day after day after day and you hear these same things again and again, once you do that in a set little, even just in a short period of time, if you've done it consistently for a couple or a few days, you feel different. Those things go in your heart, they go in your mind, they go in your soul, and they affect you. And so when you go out in the world, you're more able to deal with things without fall down, without losing your Krishna consciousness, without losing your discretionary ability to remain Krishna conscious. It really works. You know, and then when you do that long term, you put a month together, you put a year together, you put years together of always coming to the temple, of always chanting around, of always hearing the Bhagavatam. My gosh, it becomes an asset that's deeply rooted inside you, inside your heart, inside your soul. You become advanced. You can actually learn. Oh, I'm making a mistake how I treat the devotees. Let's change this. Oh, I'm making a mistake how I do this in the world. Let's change this. We can do that. And Krishna's kind. Even though we make mistakes, he doesn't say, don't come in front of me anymore. You're an idiot. You're a fool. You know, I don't want to see you again. That's how we treat each other, right? When we've got some hurt or somebody hurts us or offends us, that's how we want to treat them. Oh, I don't want to see that person. But Krishna's never like that. He doesn't see the bad things. He only sees the good that we do. And he never stops loving us. Like the father, right? Whose son leaves, says, give me all my wealth. I'm going to go out and enjoy. And then comes back, you know, crawling on his belly. Father, let me just live with the pigs. I'd be happy just to eat what the pigs eat in your house because I've lost everything and now I'm suffering. And the father doesn't say, yeah, you can live in the barn, you know, stay with the pig. No, he picks him up, says, get him nice clothes, get him a place to sit, feed him the nicest foods. And the other brothers say, why have you done this? You know, we never left. And he said, I love you as much as I love him, but he was lost. He left and now he's come back. That's a miracle. That's incredible. And so that's the way it is with Krishna and us. Krishna is so happy that we're coming back to him and he's been waiting for so long. Every single soul in the material world, he wants back. How many souls are there? If you walk out into the park, how many living entities are there? There's a soul in every living. That's amazing. That's Krishna. He's so powerful, so big, so many expansions, so many living entities. in the material world, in the spiritual world. The ones in the spiritual world never leave. They always love Krishna. They never have to fall down. We fell down. We had to come to the material world. We had to pretend we're God. We had to live out this, do something that the soul needed to overcome its stupidity to say, no, Krishna, I only want you. And that's why the material world's here. It's a wonderful thing, actually, when you think about it, how it works. And the process of Krishna consciousness works to bring us back out again. And so it's Krishna's just waiting for us as a loving father, as a loving father. And sometimes fathers, they have to be hard on their kids, right? They have to discipline. And they don't want to, but they're like, well, I have to be the heavy. You know, sometimes the wife will say to you, I don't want to be the heavy. Okay, you got to be the heavy with the child. And you don't want to, but you're doing it for their good. So you have to be a little bit like, well, you know, I'm a little bit hard. But in your heart, you really want to just, you know, give love. Or sometimes the child is really behaves terribly, you know, and has to be forced out of the house or has to go live outside. And the father might be incredibly angry with the child. In the heart, no, they want the child back, but they can't give up their strongness of feeling because the child's still misbehaving, you know. And the parent knows if the child misbehaves, like their life's not going to come out good. So sometimes the child will come back, and who helps to soften the father's heart? The mother, right? The mother. So Radharani is like that for us. Sri Radha Kalachanji, Srimati Radharani, she's our mother. And so she helps us to get the mercy of the Father again. Even though in his heart, Krishna always wants to give us the love. Sometimes we've been so bad that she has to go, hey, look at that one. That person's been so bad. But now look what they're doing. So Radharani helps us in that way. And it's just like in the material world, it's a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. But many of the principles that are so important in the spiritual world, they work here in the material world. And so that's some of my realizations. And I hope they were okay. And if anybody has any comments or questions. No comments or questions. Okay. Well, we'll head to breakfast. It's coming out soon. His Grace Maturnath Prabhu has been a wonderful pujari. And now he's going to go back into the prasadam room and finish up duties and get things ready. And at 8:30, the Maha Prasadam will come out. So it'll come from his own hand. Maturnath Prabhu will be feeding us from his own hand. No, he'll be one of the intermediaries that brings out the prasadam. But Krishna is feeding us from his own hand. We think we do these things ourselves. I work, I got money, I go buy things. No, you know, the farmer gave me this food. No, who sent the rain? Who sent the grains? Krishna does. So let's all enjoy prasadam. Maha prasadam ki. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai. Hari Bol Prabhu, welcome back.